This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey everyone, Boomer Esiason here. The NFL draft is behind us and your favorite team is now gearing up for week number one. The free Odyssey app puts you right in the middle of the pro football conversation with the biggest sports radio stations from across the country. The local voices who know your team the best, giving you their unfiltered takes on the current state of your squad. It's always football season right here on the free Odyssey app.
There have been times over the last several months where I haven't laughed nearly that hard, where I haven't had the opportunity to just throw my head back and do the old belly laugh. Now, you all hear me laugh on the air, mostly laughing at myself. Let's just be honest, probably 70% of what I laugh at on my radio show is me being a dork or making mistakes like, let's see what suits, follow sport. And the worst is that I had to leave it. I couldn't fix it because we were up against a hard break. So if I had stopped to correct it, it would have been even worse. So I just had to leave it and hope that no one would notice. Of course, people did notice. So I've missed laughing with family and friends. I don't live near my family, though I would have seen my family over the last few months, if not for the fact that I had to cancel trips. And I know many of you are in the same boat. I've got friends who are just now seeing their parents, your parents who might be a little bit older, or friends for the first time. And so, yeah, there's a lot that I've missed, but I've tried to remain hopeful. There are days when I've gone down the dark rabbit hole and where there have been more tears than there have been smiles. And I suspect a lot of us have been on that emotional roller coaster. But survival is nothing to sneeze at. It's important, right? And I look back on these last 3 months, and no matter how bad, how dark at times, how frustrating, how challenging, both personally and professionally, I have a house. I actually have a little plot of land with a cozy little cape. For the first time in my life, it's a very small plot of land, but my own little space. I will never forget 2020 for that reason. Now, there may be other reasons why I remember 2020, some fondly, some not. But in the midst of all of this is this incredible blessing. I have a house. So there are times when I've had to stop and remind myself, Amy, it's not all bad. Big picture, Aim. Big picture. It's not all bad. I mean, there's certainly plenty of darker moments and painful moments and reasons to freak out. So, as many of you know, I have a 98-year-old grandmother. She's been essentially sequestered now. She's had no visitors other than the people who work at her assisted living facility. She's had no visitors in more than 3 months. In Wisconsin, her particular community shut down pretty early. And I'm thankful for that because none of them have the virus. Not one resident, and there are hundreds of them between the nursing home and the assisted living facility, not one of them has tested positive for the virus. They've had a couple who've had flu-like symptoms. They tested them. They came back negative. There were a couple of workers who did have the virus, but thankfully were not in contact with the residents to the point where it was contagious. Or to the point where they were contagious, I should say. Of course, the virus is contagious. But it's been hard because in the state of Wisconsin, while they're advocating to have some of these nursing homes reopen and these assisted living facilities allow limited visitations, they're not yet at that point. And so here I am calling my Grammy once every week, once every 10 days. In fact, during our birthday weeks, we actually share a birthday week. I was born one day after her birthday. I called her three times. And there are times when she said to me she's scared. There are times when she gives me hope because she's the same. Honestly, I think she's more equipped to handle this than I am. And yet, the doors still aren't open. And for the first time in my life, I can't go visit my grandmother if that's what I want to do. And that's hard. That sucks. And I know many of you feel the same way. Maybe you have elderly parents or grandparents, other relatives, loved ones. Maybe they've been in the hospital. They've been sick. You can't get to them. I'm so grateful she's not sick and hasn't been sick. But man, there are times where it's depressing and infuriating that I can't go see her if I want to. So there has been this roller coaster of emotions for me. And so there are times when I have to stop and remind myself, it's not all bad, Amy. It's not. But I'm one of those people that I can get really wrapped up in my emotions and they can start to spin around me like a cyclone. And it's hard for me to stop that cycle. It's hard for me to stop those crazy winds in that storm. And so there's been a lot of reflection, maybe more than I've ever wanted. A lot of talking on the phone. Not nearly as many video calls, thank heavens, because after a while I just get tired of staring at a screen. I really found out it's important to get away from staring at the screen. And now these last 2+ weeks of moving and taking care of 2 yards. Oh, heavens to Betsy. I would recommend that if you would like to keep busy during a quarantine. Volunteer to take care of your neighbor's yard in addition to your own. Oh my gosh. So yeah, the last 2.5-3 weeks have worn me out and I'm just ready to get this moving process over with. By the way, the new house now has central air and a brand new furnace. Oh, so cool. So cool. I don't think I'll tweet a photo of my brand new air conditioning unit, but I'm pretty excited. It was installed on Thursday, and that was really the last thing that had to be done before I could move in. So when I put the offer in on the house, I knew it didn't have central air. I have no idea how this older couple, lovely couple, they own the house for 40 years, how they survive without AC. But Penny and I don't do well without AC. In fact, the dog is currently conked out. And would not be this calm or conked out if she didn't have the AC on. We don't do well in humidity. Anyway, so that was kind of a cool thing. Just one day at a time, right? One day at a time, one goal at a time, one step at a time, one project at a time, whatever it is, however it is that you manage it. I know for me, sometimes it's 1 hour at a time. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. You all are so kind to listen to my stories. You do every night, and that's cool. We're inside the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loan Studios. These are challenging times, and Rocket Mortgage is prepared to help. If you need mortgage assistance, contact the team 24/7 at rocketmortgage.com. From their home to yours, the team at Rocket Mortgage is with you. So on Twitter, A-Law Radio, if you want to share some of your reflections over the last 3 months, and, you know, I'm not one of those people that shies away from hard stuff or tough emotions. I know it's been hard. And they're also been positive. So whether it's a high or it's a low, whatever it is, maybe it's something in between, something you thought about or something that you never would have expected in your own life over the past 3 months. It's good to hear from you all. However, I'm going to stop trying to interpret your posts live on the air, because when they don't have punctuation, it does not go well for me. So I need to proofread them first. 855-212-4227. That's 855-212-4CBS. No, I'm not talking about golf for the rest of the show. I mean, I like the golf and it was fun to see it back, but you know, if all I did was talk about golf and NASCAR, which right now are the sports, golf, NASCAR, UFC, which didn't have an event this week. But if I only talked about those two things, I might lose more listeners than if I spent my entire show going political. So neither one of those is going to happen. We kind of piecemeal it together. But hearing from Alex Cora on Thursday, well, that was something that I thought, okay, this will be fun to talk about. He is willing to take responsibility for taking part in this cheating scandal that gripped the Astros really for all of 2020 until sports shut down, right? It was the story in sports. In fact, I would even venture to say it was as big in terms of its tenure and how long it was the headline. It was as big as the Chiefs coming from behind in the fourth quarter to beat the Niners and win the Super Bowl. It seemed like it was never going to go away. Show after show after show after show. And as part of the Rob Manfred report and the investigation that baseball did, which included mountains of papers and emails, hours of interviews with players, with people who were involved with the Astros in 17, the fallout included the GM, the manager of the Astros, and then also Alex Cora, who, of course, had moved on to the Red Sox after Houston won the World Series in 17. This is the first time that Cora has done an interview. Now, he released a statement back when he got, well, they called it a mutual parting of ways, a mutual decision, which always makes me roll my eyes. But Cora hadn't done any interviews. Well, he talked to Marley Rivera, who's a great reporter for ESPN. And he told Marley that the part that bothers him the most is that the way it's been reported and construed, there's this impression that the entire sign-stealing scandal, it's a lot of the entire sign-stealing scandal, I shouldn't press my luck. I can't say it very many times without messing up. To put it at the feet of him and Carlos Beltran, who was briefly the manager of the Mets, he says that's a pile of poo. My paraphrase, of course. He actually blames Jeff Luhnow, who's the Astros GM, who got fired going back to when the report was first out. He says it's Luhnow who's spreading this story about how it's Cora and it's Beltran, and nobody else was really part of it. That all of the rest of the Astros were innocent bystanders. I mean, considering the fact that it wasn't Beltran and Cora who were banging on trash cans, I mean, I think that's really hard to believe. But he says that his former boss, Luhnow, is the one who is one of the people who's out there spreading this lie about how it was just those two guys. So he tells Molly Rivera, quote, "If there is one thing I'm absolutely sure of, it is that it was not a two-man show. We all did it. And let me be very clear that I am not denying my responsibility because we were all responsible." So that's part of Alex Cora's comments. But he says it's not fair that he gets fingered as the mastermind, the sole mastermind. And he kind of points to some of the players who've said this wasn't just on Cora, but he clearly has some issues with his former GM. Again, I will go back to the fact that just by virtue of how circumstances have worked out, if you're AJ Hinch, Jeff Luhnow, Alex Cora, I mean, you get suspended for a year and it happens in 2020 where we might have 50 baseball games. You freaking hit the jackpot. If we get baseball, for the most part, it's going to be a season with an asterisk on it. Maybe not for the team that ends up winning a World Series if we get to that point. But come on. You barely miss out. And baseball has such a black mark right now. A dark stain. That it's losing fans left and right just by this whole stalemate that's stalling the start of the season. You couldn't have asked for it to work out any better other than they would keep their jobs, of course. I mean, they did still get fired and they still lost a year of earnings power, but honestly, if it's me and I'm in Cora's shoes or AJ Hinch's shoes or Jeff Luhnow's shoes, I'm thinking, whoa, this couldn't have worked out any better. It's such a mess, such a disaster. Sports have been gone anyway, but baseball is such a disaster right now. It's almost better that I'm not involved in the season. Now, of course, they'd rather have jobs than not have jobs. But I think in AJ Hinch's case, he's going to get a job really quick as soon as he's eligible. Cora probably will too. There's no way it was a two-man operation. There's no way nobody else was complicit or compliant. I don't know how many guys liked it, didn't like it, wanted to be part of it, didn't, benefited, didn't, whatever the case was. But come on, if it's only Cora and Beltran, well, eventually the whole thing dies out, because if nobody's listening to them, just ignoring what they're doing, yeah, why keep up with it? But do you remember there was a column, and I do not remember, I'd have to go back and Google it. But there was a column that came out, a report. Is this a new report or an old report? There was a report that came out that painted Cora and Beltran as kind of these heavy-handed, almost godfather figures, where they were the ones, because of their power and their clout in the clubhouse, especially Beltran, that nobody dared cross him, that they were almost afraid of Cora and Beltran. And so they dared not speak up. I remember doing a show about how, you've got to be kidding me. If I'm AJ Hinch and this is happening on my watch, I'm pulling a power trip. I'm sorry, you are the bench coach. I am the manager. Sit down and zip it. If it got to that point. But there was even some suggestion that Hinch was afraid of Cora and Beltran because of the power they had in the clubhouse, that he was afraid to speak up. No. You know what Hinch could do? He could fire him. I mean, blech. The whole thing was a mess. A lot of people were participating in it. I have no doubt about that. But Cora, of course, he did get painted as the worst of the worst. He lost a job, he got suspended, and the commissioner's report is the one that came down heavy on him because of the testimonies of the players, right? That's where the commissioner and his investigative team got it from, the emails and the interviews. And so as much as Cora wants to point to Luhnow and say he's the one that's perpetuating the story, even if it's overblown and it wasn't specifically Cora and Beltran and only Cora and Beltran, it was at least enough of them, or that was the perception, that players came forward and pointed to them. Because otherwise, Cora and Beltran wouldn't have been singled out in that report. So whether they were made the fall guys, or whether it was accurate, Rob Manfred is the one who suspended him. And same thing with AJ Hinch, because the buck stops with him. I mean, they didn't just decide to pick Cora's name out of a hat. So obviously there were people who were pointing to Cora and pointing to Beltran. Dave did a quick Google search. It was from The Athletic, and it was about Carlos Beltran as kind of the godfather of sorts. Ken Rosenthal, Evan Drellich, and then Mark Carrig, who are part of that reporting. Thank you, Dave. 855-212-4227. We're good. You're good. It's good is what I meant to say. She talks for a living. It's good to have you on board. So coming up next, Pete Carroll doing an extensive video call about, yes, the offseason, but also about Colin Kaepernick and why the Seahawks didn't sign Kaepernick in 2017. Typical of Pete, even through a Zoom call, the man exudes enthusiasm. It leaps through the radio at you. So you'll hear from him coming up. On Twitter, A-Law Radio. It's been 3 months.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
Seahawks quarterback Russell Wilson last week, in the midst of a lot of peaceful protests, as well as the looting and the rioting, and thankfully a lot of that has dissipated, has dispersed. Curfews have been lifted all over the country. I don't even know if there is a city where curfews are still in effect, but I know in New York City it was lifted, and many other major cities the curfews have been lifted. And so there are a lot of athletes who have been much more reflective and willing to use their platforms to speak out, willing to kind of jump into the fray, so to speak. And you remember during The Last Dance, there was almost an entire episode in which Michael Jordan and others kind of looked back on his reluctance to jump into social issues or the social arena or politics. And remember, his mom wanted him to endorse a particular candidate, and he didn't, he wouldn't. But he said, it's not because I don't care. You know, it was about him feeling like he had to be careful of his platform, be careful what messages he sent. He didn't want to endorse a candidate that he didn't know a lot about. So he's a lot more careful about it. But also, let's be frank, you know, he was trying to protect his image and his brand. And I understand that. As an up-and-coming athlete who had so much earnings potential, he was kind of busting through this glass ceiling, and he didn't want to be controversial. All right, so that was his choice. There are many more athletes today in 2020, and really going back the last, I don't know, 5-10 years, who are more willing to use their platforms for particular statements, whether political, whether social. I think we've really seen it ramped up over the last couple of weeks. You don't have to like it, but it's unrealistic to expect athletes to stick to their sport, because no one human being is one-dimensional. We're all multidimensional. We have families. We have friends. We have jobs. We have hobbies. We have fears. We have anxieties. We have problems. We have challenges. We have victories. We have failures. As humans, we are multi-layered. None of us sticks to our career. And I get it, because with sports, many people want to separate their entertainment from the heavy stuff. But sports is also a microcosm of real life, which means at times it's impossible to not have the two intersect and to not have the social and the political intersect with the sports. Now, I feel like on this show, I do a pretty darn good job of not talking politics. I don't think social and political are always the same thing. They don't always intersect. We do wade into the social, and then we wade out again. And we wade back in, and we wade back out again. But right now, it's impossible for me, to do my job without talking about what's happening in our country with the protests in the wake of the George Floyd killing, because it's the number one topic in sports among athletes. And I appreciate, whether or not I agree with them, I appreciate that there are so many who are willing to use their platforms for what they believe is positive change. Again, I don't have to agree with all of them, but it takes guts sometimes and courage to stand up, to step out, to make a statement when you know there's going to be backlash, especially on social media. Social media sucks, no matter who you are. And if you're a public figure, it's worse, trust me. I'm not even a minutia of a public figure of some of these professional athletes. I like to say I'm X-list famous. Remember, wasn't it Kathy? Oh my gosh, what was the redhead's name? What is this? She's like a comedian. Kathy, thank you, Kathy Griffin. She had a show or something called D-list famous. I like to say I'm X or Y or Z-list famous. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Pete Carroll, enthusiastic as always, doing his big Zoom video call on Thursday, and he was asked about this unique offseason.
I didn't have a clue what was going to happen here. And I asked the coaches to use every ounce of their creativity that they could and their energy that they could to keep them the meetings proactive and involved and upbeat and moving it like we always like to do, and didn't know if that would translate, through the technology. But it has. And we've had We've made incredible progress. I think we're smarter at this point because of the added time that we've had to work and really focus on the mental side of it than we've ever been. We're going to go again next week. Will be our last week. We have been disciplined, strict about it. Gosh, it's been amazing how much interaction there has been. And I give a lot of credit to the guys behind the scenes orchestrated so that it could come off this way.
Typical Pete Carroll. You can hear him oozing his confidence, oozing it. Confidence, enthusiasm, excitement. You know, you talk to guys who played for him, who do play for him. We had a high-performance psychologist on the show maybe a month and a half ago who specifically works with the Seahawks and works closely with Pete Carroll, has for the last month. I'm sorry, for the last decade. I don't know where I got month from. Has for the last decade, and he says Pete's always like that. I mean, you got to keep up with Pete Carroll. Otherwise, you're going to be left in the dust. Coach was also asked about Colin Kaepernick, because if you remember, it was the Seahawks who brought him in for a workout in 17 and who considered signing him.
Cap called me during the season, before that offseason. He had called out of the blue to ask me, you know, for some advice about where he would go next. I was flattered that he would even think to call me, because we had never talked before that I could, other than just, you know, greetings. From that point, I was kind of rooting for him, you know, and hoping that things will work out. And so when it came back around, and I forgot about it, but we came back around and we had a chance to visit him, you know, and it came up, I was thinking, okay, this is an incredible football player. Let's find out if it could possibly fit football wise and all of that. And then also because he hadn't visited anywhere yet, you know, maybe this would help him, you know, open up doors for him if our thing didn't work out. And we had great meetings. I don't know that I've ever explained it in as much depth, but we spent half a day together. He spent time with our people throughout the building and almost a full day. And he was awesome. He just backed up even more of the play that we had seen in the character and in his smarts and his togetherness and his competitiveness, to the point where it was so obvious that he's a starter in the NFL.
Okay, it's cut off a little bit there, but Pete Carroll raving about Colin Kaepernick as a football player, as a guy who knew the game. Certainly, Pete and the Seahawks had a chance to get up close and personal with Kaepernick's style of play, his leadership, his tenacity. He's a guy, this is how I always described Kaepernick. He was a quarterback who could make the hard plays look easy, but sometimes struggled with the simple. I mean, there were ups and downs in his career, no doubt. So then why, if Pete Carroll was so high on Kaepernick and really enjoyed that meeting, did he and the Seahawks not sign Kaepernick in 2017?
The fact that it didn't work out, it, you know, for us, you know, I figured he's going to wind up starting somewhere for sure, and it just didn't happen. So the rest of that story is one that I regret that didn't happen in some fashion. I wish we would have contributed to it, because the guy deserved to play. I thought at the time, in our situation as a backup, man, I didn't feel it was right at that time. So I had to make that football decision. It was about our team and the situation. We had our starting quarterback and all of that. And it wasn't going to be the open competitive situation that I'd like to think all of our spots are, because Russ was such a dominant figure.
So Pete Carroll, who of course committed to Russell Wilson in his rookie training camp and made him the starter, he said, "I assumed that Kaepernick would find a team, that there would be a team out there who would want him as a starter. So we didn't feel like it was something we needed to do to bring him on as a backup. I thought he would find a job." I don't know if those two things are necessarily connected. A, they had their starter. They were not looking for another starter or even a competition. Russell Wilson entrenched, period, end of story. They didn't need another starter. And that's what Pete Carroll saw when he looked at Colin Kaepernick. He thought, and then, so that's the A part. The B part is that he thought Kaepernick would find another job. Pete Carroll on Thursday on a Zoom call. Here's something else that came out of that call, which I had not heard before. But he says he's fielded a phone call from another team asking about Colin Kaepernick, as in 2020. He says no other team had ever called him about Colin in the past, but it happened this week. He wouldn't say which team called him. But on the Zoom call, Pete Carroll said, it gives me the impression that at least one team in the NFL is interested in signing him.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
Athletic NBA insider Shams Charania talking about the format that we believe the NBA will stick to. Now, I would have been firm on that until 24 hours ago when we started hearing about some players who are not sure they want to spend their time, whether it be 7 weeks, 8 weeks, however many weeks it requires, that they stay in the Orlando bubble. They're not so sure about that. So I thought it was fascinating that the number one concern, at least according to the reports from this conference call where players would jump on and off at their leisure, the number one concern was not the virus, though certainly there are some who are concerned about safety and their families, but the number one concern was having to stay in Orlando in this bubble for at least 7 weeks. The first 7 weeks, there could be no visitors. So it's a 22-team format now, but what if you have a team with a handful of guys who don't think it's worth it? In other words, don't believe that they have a legit shot at winning the title or winning a playoff round or two. And so they just decide, we're good. It was Damian Lillard who said, this is before the NBA revealed its return to play plan when they were still considering all the options. It was Damian Lillard who came out and said, I'm not just going to return to play games that don't matter. The NBA has the ability to expand this. They can come up with any format they like. And I'm only going to return after this long layoff if I can participate in games that count, that matter, that give me a shot and give the Blazers a shot at the postseason. And of course, the Blazers are one of those teams on the outside looking in at the top eight spots in the West for now. Okay, so right now, you've got five teams in the West that are within six games of that final playoff spot, the one team in the East, which is the Washington Wizards. But the Blazers will be part of this Orlando bubble, presumably, once we get there in mid-July when they will start a training camp of sorts. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Now, you remember, seems forever ago, right? But Carmelo Anthony, he resurrected his career. He got an opportunity to play with the Blazers, and they're missing some guys because of injuries. But he really did find a rhythm and a groove and get comfortable there. And now there's a possibility that he could head to Orlando and be part of everything that's happening there this spring and this NBA postseason unlike any other.
I know the focus that we have. I know, you know, how locked in that we are right now, the understanding what's ahead of us. But that also makes it exciting for me and for our team because, you know, this is all new to everybody, right? This will be new to everybody. New environment, new situations, new circumstances, new opportunities.
In addition to having a shot at the NBA title, I feel like if you are inside the NBA community or even if you're watching from afar, you recognize the possibilities are endless in this Orlando bubble. There will be upsets. I'm confident of it. I don't know who, I don't know how, I don't know what round, I don't know when. But not every player is going to come back in the same rhythm and groove they were when the season shut down. Not every team is going to play as well. It's just not possible. And so the possibility for upsets, the fact that it's quirky, it's weird, you're playing a handful of regular season games, but not everybody on your schedule is in Orlando. I mean, the whole thing is just, it's a novelty. Let's hope we never see it again. That alone, plus the possibility of being able to upset one of those top teams, at least as of March 11th, that would be enough to draw me if I were a player on one of these other kind of outlier teams. It's After Hours on CBS Sports Radio. Melo says that he is, if he chooses to play, he is physically ready.
As far as from a physical standpoint, Yes, I'm ready. I'm in the gym. We're in the gym because we understand. You know, the minute that you know the horn go off, we have to be ready as a team. And Portland specifically. So we're kind of approaching this a lot differently than a lot of other teams.
So he says the Portland Trail Blazers are staying ready, although they're going to have plenty of time to ramp up. The way that the NBA has dragged this out, and I think it, according to Keith Smith, Yahoo NBA insider who joined us a couple weeks ago, when the return to play plan was unveiled, one of the things I asked him was, why are they waiting so long? I thought the original plan was 3 weeks and let's get back to it. And he said, you know, a lot of feedback from athletic trainers, from coaches, from players is that it can't be done that quickly. And so what Melo is saying is that they've been staying ready all along. But I do believe that for the most part, these teams will have plenty of time to get comfortable. Whether they do, whether they fall right back into a rhythm remains to be seen, because we know that human beings are the ultimate variable. It may, as one golfer said, Gary Woodland said on the tee on Thursday in returning to golf, he said, my adrenaline was way down because there were no fans. The whole thing felt weird. And I know I didn't hit the ball nearly as hard because I wasn't feeling that same surge of adrenaline. There will be all these mitigating factors, these variables that have never really come into play before. And so I don't know that you can automatically assume anything about the NBA's return, the NHL return. But now that we know, there are players who are deciding, taking this decision very seriously. Do I go? Do I not go? Is it worth it? Is it worth the sacrifices? Maybe you're not going to get many of them put a voice to that. I mean, there might be some. Melo's an older player, but he says he's physically ready. And yet still, he's not decided yet.
As far as actually playing and going back down into Orlando, I'm still up in the air a little bit because I really don't, you know, we don't have all the details. We don't know a lot of information. So until we have that, it's kind of hard to just, you know, commit to it 100%.
According to NBA sources, and this comes through Adrian Wojnarowski, Bobby Marks, who's been on the show before. Somebody did the math, but I think it's fascinating. We'll call this your NBA return to play nerd alert. 14 of the 22 teams will be eliminated within 53 days of showing up in Orlando. How about that? So the NBA's got this schedule, clearly, otherwise you wouldn't be able to count days. And while the NBA maybe hasn't revealed that schedule or revealed the minutia of it, they've done enough that they can leak it that 14 of the 22 will be out. They'll be done and able to leave Orlando within 53 days of arriving at the Wild World of Sports Complex. And no doubt this is in response. This leak is in response to the concerns by some players who think they're going to be stuck there for weeks and weeks and not be allowed to leave or be allowed to see anyone. It may not be a concern to you and I. I mean, many of us have done the exact same thing over the last 3 months. But the NBA clearly is putting this number out there in response to the reports that there are players who don't want to be stuck in Orlando for 7 weeks. So again, 53 days, only 8 teams will be left. And after 67 days, which is 2 months, 2 months and a handful, only 4 teams will be left. So the NBA is saying, according to our schedule, we'll be down to the conference finals in 67 days. That's their number, not mine. How specific is that, right? Nerd alert! Ooh, I'm off. I'm off. I haven't practiced it in so long that now I'm a little bit rusty. Let's try that again. Me. See what I mean? Me. Got to work on my own inflection and tone. Nerd alert! Oh, that was so much better. I just woke up my dog. Nerd alert! Nerd alert! I'm the only one who thought that was funny, I'm sure, but it just didn't sound right when I first said it. It's been a while. I got to keep exercising. I got to get back into shape, actual game shape. So the NBA will start its training camps July 9th through 11th, and you're going to have these quarantines, and then they head to Orlando. They do a training camp there, and they've got July 30th. As the start of games. And within 67 days, they'll be down to the Final Four. Straight ahead, we'll talk about the Grizzlies and the NBA's return with Eric Hasseltine.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.